Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta, my amateur radio call sign, N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. Here on the Courage Handyam system, I'm reading for you World Radio Magazine Online for January 2011. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handyham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handyhams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. We have a great website, too. If you have internet capabilities, you should check it out. It's www.handyham.org. First of all, of course, I wish you all a very happy new year. So does the editor, Richard Fisher, with his editor's log. It's titled, Resolving to Make 2011 the Start of a Decade of Getting It Done. Let's hear from you. What are your aspirations, goals, projects for 2011 and the 20-teens? Diving into a new mode? Is your focus on antennas, DX, and contests? Restoring vintage gear, space operations? Please let us know. Drop an email to worldradioonline@gmail.com and we'll share your plans with WRO readers. That bright light you see over there on the horizon is the dawn of 2011 and the 20-teens. It's a twofer that offers the amateur radio community a pause for reflection, projection, and lots of action. On a grand scale, there are the ongoing challenges of attracting more younger people, how fitting for the teens, and families to our hobby. There are important initiatives regarding protection, expansion, and efficient utilization of frequency spectrum, new modes, new technologies, new ways to operate. You get the idea. It's an exciting time. But on a micro level, it's a chance to look inward as well. Ask yourself, how can I make ham radio more interesting and fun? We tossed around the idea with readers on a Sunday evening of late last year during one of our WRO live online chat sessions. Modest beginnings in 2011, you know, have the potential to turn into a full decade of opportunity. Here's a sampling of enthusiastic radio amateurs who reflect, project, and are ready to act. Bob Conciatori, KI4VOV, wrote from Palm Harbor, Florida, that her resolution is to try to get more of our East Lake CERT, that's Community Emergency Response Team members, to become licensed hams. It's a tough sell, she says. Angel Sanchez-Diaz, a WP3GW of Torrijos Alto, Puerto Rico, wrote, since I have done much, my New Year's resolution is to at least work 100 countries every year so as to participate in the CQDX Marathon. Ray LaJoy, KB1LRL of Fitchburg, Massachusetts, wants to get an RTTY station working and start getting into some contests. He also has a Viking Valiant, too. He wants to get going. That's a really old radio. We wish him well. Jack Ciacia, WM0G of Boulder, Colorado, aspires to learn a new mode when I can. I am trying to become more proficient with D-Star operating techniques and gear. And Ron Erickson, K0IC of Essex, Iowa, said he has a Kenwa TS-520 that needs some work for the new year. I also want to put my Valiant 1 and CE-10B on 160 meters. From Nate Bargeman, N0BN of Marysville, Kansas, a new QTH. Oh, wait, that's every year. I guess I'll just resolve to continue to have fun with ham radio. Now, regarding these internet chats that we've had this past couple of years, if you want to join us on the web, in 2011. WRO Live Online Chat schedule is taking shape nicely. January 9, February 6, and March 6. If there's enough interest, we'll hold a midweek session or two as well. They all begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday at 0100 UTC Monday and are casual, friendly affairs. Again, you can visit that website I gave you before, www.worldradioonline, that's one word, worldradioonline.blogspot.com, to sign up for an email reminder that a chat is imminent. You can also see replays of previous chats on the site. And that's Richard Fisher's commentary in the editor's log for January 2011 of World Radio. So from there, we jump into the news front category. FCC makes sweeping changes to vanity call sign rules. A report and order released by the Federal Communications Commission in early November makes both major and minor changes to the vanity and club call sign programs and finalizes a notice of proposed rulemaking issued a year ago, writes Frederick Omea, W5YI, in his Washington readout column in January's CQ Amateur Radio magazine. Areas impacted by the ruling include the license cancellation procedure, availability of a deceased license's call sign, exceptions to the two-year waiting period, ineligible applicants, club station trustees, limits on club station licenses, available call signs, restrictions on call sign availability, renewal fees, and some minor non-subsistive amendments to the amateur service rules, writes W5YI. The complete details are carried in this month's CQ Amateur Radio magazine. A complaint filed in the U.S. District Court of Maine alleges Glenn Baxter, K-I-M-A-N, has not responded to a Federal Communications Commission order to pay a $21,000 fine for violations of Part 97 of the Commission Rules and Regulations, according to published reports. The civil action in late October was brought by two U.S. attorneys in regard to a previous ruling that determined Baxter willfully and repeatedly violated Section 97.101D, making transmissions on top of existing communications on the frequency 3.890 MHz, and also Section 97.113 sub A 3, transmitting communications in which the station, licensee, or control operator has a pecuniary interest. Baxter has been cited for willful violations of Section 97.105A, exercising control of a station, and Section 97.113B, broadcasting, and for failure to file required information pursuant to Enforcement Bureau directive, as well, the report says. Baxter in October filed a $50 million countersuit against the United States and FCC, denying, quoting, each and every allegation of wrongdoing and or FCC rules violation described in the complaint, close quote. That came from the American Radio Relay League commentaries and other sources. Amateur radio operators in two flood-stricken areas of Thailand helped authorities set up a communications center using the call sign HS3AN, according to Thailand's Amateur Radio Society, which is RAST. HS4XU said teams have pitched in with soldiers, rescue volunteers, and workers from various foundations by helping flood-stricken people with food and to ferry expectant mothers to hospitals, according to the Amateur Radio Newsline. The club station, HS3AN, has been coordinating relief work with the help of other amateur radio communication centers based in three other cities as well, according to ARN. The operators have also been providing information to people traveling to and from flood-stricken areas. There are more than 100,000 ham radio operators in Thailand. Richard Jensen has been named chief of the Air Force Military Auxiliary Radio System, that's MARS, M-A-R-S, completing the final phase of the organization's leadership transition, according to David J. Trachtenberg, public information officer. A program manager at the Air Force Network Integration Center at Scott Air Force Base, Illinois, he replaces Tech Sergeant Jason E. Sandifer, who has served as interim chief since May of 2010. Scott Air Force Base is home to United States Air Force MARS. Jensen's experience includes providing training and communications support to the Air National Guard and setting up phone patch links between ground stations and military aircraft in flight. In early 2010, Jensen played a role in disaster relief efforts in Haiti. Quoting, "I am honored to have been selected to lead this organization of dedicated volunteer radio communicators and enthusiastic about my new responsibilities," Jensen said. "The members of Air Force MARS can be rightly proud of their service to the nation, and I am eager to work with all of them as we enhance our ability to serve those who serve us." Ugandan shortwave intruder identified on 40 meters. A station identifying itself as Radio Uganda is refusing to leave the amateur-only portion of 40 meters after notification from the government, according to published reports. The African station is on 7.195 megahertz. Following notification by 5X1JM, the Uganda Communications Commission informed Radio Uganda that the broadcaster is not permitted to use the frequency. The station, however, continues to use the frequency. Uganda radio operators have been authorized by Uganda Communications Commission to use 7.1 to 7.2 megahertz. That was furnished by 5Zulu 4. November Uniform, 5Z4NU. One more news piece. G3XBM's 500 kHz WSPR signal heard in Finland. Running well under 1 watt of power, Roger Lapthorne, G3XBM, says he was using the digital mode WSPR on 500 kHz October 21, 2010, when, quite unexpectedly, he began receiving a string of reports from Paul Henrik, OH1LSQ, in Grid Square KPO3SD in Finland, more than 1,076 miles away, according to published reports. From Cambridge, England, Lapthorne said that to him, these were amazing reports pushing his best DX on the band to new levels. "It is because he runs only a few milliwatts of effective radiated power on that band." He also notes that his transmitting antenna is a very simple vertical loop made with wire only 1 millimeter thick. We thank Southgate Communications for that commentary. And that ends Online Newsfront for January 2011. Now comes our featured article. On land and at sea, JOTA Scouts rally on the air. This is authored by the World Radio Online staff and news services. Since 1958, the third weekend of October finds thousands of boys and Girl Scouts and guides gathering over the amateur radio airwaves for a worldwide wireless campout, Jamboree on the Air. It's an opportunity for young people annually to see the wonders of ham radio and to make friends with scouts from around the world, in many cases without ever having to leave their hometown. Many scouts and leaders hold licenses and have their own stations, but the majority participates in JOTA through stations operated by local radio clubs and individual radio operators. Some operators use television or computer-linked communications, according to JOTA information found on the Internet. A 2010 Jamboree on the Air site at Camp McNeil near White Oaks, North Carolina, for example, brought out an estimated 300-plus Cub Scouts from all over the state, said Glenn Cox, KE4MBY, of Castle Hayne. It was sponsored by the Cape Fear Council of Scouting. About 24 JOTA QSOs were logged. One of the most interesting contacts was in Oklahoma, where a Cub Scout troop was visiting a buffalo ranch. KE4MBY said, "The North Carolina Scouts did not know we were going to be there, but that didn't stop their curiosity. Many Cub Scouts made contacts, and we were quite excited," he said. The parents were somewhat unaware of the role amateur radio plays in emergency communications. "While there was a line to make contacts," KE4BMY said, "I was handing out free literature from the National Weather Service Forecast Office and explaining my role as the Assistant Emergency Coordinator for Skywarn." Meanwhile, answering a request by the battleship North Carolina, the Azalea Coast Amateur Radio Club of Wilmington, North Carolina, not only demonstrated Morse code to the Scouts, but did so from the original radio rooms and the original code rooms aboard a World War II ship on JOTA weekend. One Scout noticed that the original receivers weighed in at 82 pounds, and I explained that at that time it was considered state-of-the-art. Now, a ham radio receiver weighs in at about 7 to 8 pounds, a difference of about 74 pounds, he said. The Scouts were told that the importance of Morse code during World War II was that it was a primary method of receiving messages at sea, but not for transmitting, because at sea it could give away their position to the enemy. As for the staff of the battleship North Carolina, they were nothing short of great in their efforts to assist and support the Scouts on this day, as well as any other day. Operators who took part in Jamboree on the Air on the ship included KE4MBY, Charlie Vaughn, K4UWH, president of the Azalea Coast Amateur Radio Club, Jack Jacobs, WD4OIN, Bill Usher, AG4PA, and Mary Ames of the Battleship North Carolina Museum staff. Jacobs and Usher are volunteers who help maintain the vintage radio equipment. And of course, everybody is looking forward to JOTA for 2011. It's going to be October 15 and 16 of this year, 2011. Our next piece is authored by Carol Perry, called WB2MGP. It's in the category of hams with class. Where does their inspiration come from? With the start of each school year, I like to get in touch with some of my favorite radio technology teacher friends to ask them where their inspiration comes from. Here are two stories of two good friends of mine who are in totally different positions, yet continue to show the passion for working with youngsters in a radio setting. Last May, at my Dayton Instructors Forum, I had Jim Mayersack, that's spelled M-A-Y-E-R-C-A-K, WX8J, and Jim Hendershot, WA6VQP, speak about recruiting, teaching, and working with young adults. Here are the reflections from WX8J. Jim Mayersack was positively inspirational in his presentation at the forum, yet it was he who claims to have been inspired by the youngsters he encountered at the youth forum with all their terrific ideas. Here's a quote from the summary Jim sent me. "If you ask the average person to name three places that inspire him or her, I doubt that Dayton, Ohio would be one of them. However, for radio amateurs, the Dayton Hamvention can be the epitome of what we hope to learn, purchase from, or become inspired by. Every year I expect to glean something new from my peers and their years of experience, service, and wisdom. During May 2011, my inspiration came from much younger peers, and I was most impressed." Jim is a teacher at Dresden Elementary School in Dresden, Ohio, and can be contacted at jmayersack at tvschools.org or on the air at its ham radio station KD8NOM. In phonetics, that's Kilo Delta 8 November Oscar Mike. The station's operating schedule is on the webpage. Jim has a complete HF high frequency and very high frequency station thanks to donations from local hams. His club operates single sideband, ATV, and satellite FM. He was looking for some strategies to take his group to a higher level. Listening to the young amateur presenters at the Youth Forum was where I got the spark to see what was needed. They had been accomplishing things that I mistakenly thought could only be done by us older guys, Jim said. As Jim listened to young adults sharing their experiences with service and adventure with Skyhorn, starting youth nets, working digital modes, constructing their own antennas, making International Space Station contacts, and so on, he realized the importance of having mentors. The necessity of young people having a good support system of Elmers or Elmeras is something we always talk about in this column. Jim also left the forum with the renewed conviction of the importance of building projects when working with students, just as Elmers helped him years ago and told him, if it doesn't work, we'll tear it apart and figure out why. He wants his kids not to have a fear of failure. Be sure to contact this group. So now I'll share the reflections with WA6VQP. My good friend Jim Hendersoft is member of my RCA Education Committee. He, too, was very inspired while attending the Instructors Forum and Youth Forum at Dayton 2 years ago. We spoke at length about his approaching a local school in Oregon and getting a ham radio program going. With great persistence on Jim's part, here is the current situation. The Brighton Academy has agreed to let Jim and his volunteers start a class and install an antenna, with emphasis on middle school students initially. High school and precocious elementary school kids will also be allowed on a case-by-case basis. Two instructors from the Radio Design Group, that's the company sponsored, will teach the class, Jim, WA6VQP, and Steve Andrews, K7KO. It should be noted by my readers that Jim and Steve will be volunteers stepping into a school situation. This is unlike Jim Mayerchek, who was mentioned at the beginning of this article, or myself, who taught this in middle school as teachers, and who don't often get the chance to choose who will be in the program because we're teachers. My advice is not to discount the average or even at-risk student from being a perfect candidate for your radio class. There are hundreds of stories of many unlikely kids who positively bloomed when given a chance at the fun of a ham radio class. The school Jim is at is a building long enough to allow for installation of a full-size trap dipole for 160 through 10 meters. They have some tower sections, and there is space to put up the tower along with the donated tri-band beam when the time comes. The station will be housed in a lockable roll-top desk. They currently have an S-DEN HF rig, a Yaesu 2-meter rig, an MFJ antenna tuner, and an Astron power supply. The rig was donated by a local ham, and the power supply was donated by the Southern Oregon Amateur Radio Club. Radio Design Group is donating various glue items, such as coax, connectors, power strips, and the like. Jim Hendershot is an example of a ham who got inspired to get involved with working with and teaching young people in a school setting about the fun and opportunity to give service through ham radio. We'll keep you posted when Jim is on the air. Now, here are my conclusions. If ever there were a hobby service that has such a myriad of ways to generate a ripple effect of enthusiasm and inspiration, it must surely be amateur radio. Now is the time to tell talented young hams you may know who would like to be presenters at next year's Dayton Youth Forum to contact me as soon as possible. My email contact is wb2mgp@ix.netcom.com. And we thank Carol Perry for her interesting and inspiring thoughts. Well, folks, those of you who listen to me on a regular basis know that occasionally we put in what's called a station appearance commentary. This one is about Daniel Giraud, G-I-R-A-U-D. His call sign is ZS5DG, Zulu Sierra 5 Delta Golf. He's listening from, you know where? Durban, South Africa. First, an editor's note. As so many radio amateurs can attest to today, shortwave listening is a great way to be introduced to the wonders of wireless communication. This month's station appearance features the shortwave listening and amateur radio post of Daniel Giraud, ZS5DG, in South Africa. His activities have been featured on radio outlets in Japan, Canada, and other countries. Are you as proud of your station's appearance and operation as a GS5DG? Or does your messy shack provide just the comfort you need to most enjoy the hobby? Send digital photographs of your station with details to worldradioonline@gmail.com, and we'll consider them for publication and station appearance in an upcoming edition of World Radio Online. If there's a YouTube video to accompany the still pictures, let us know, and we'll set up a link. Now for the piece itself. Although I am an amateur radio operator, my first passion is shortwave listening, writes Daniel Giraud from Durban, KZ, South Africa. I listen to all the major broadcast stations as well as airband, ship-to-shore communications, and other utilities. His combined interests have resulted in a tidy, functional, and efficient station layout for both receiving and transmitting. I have a Philips D2935 portable world band receiver, which I use with a random length of wire in the garden, he said. I was born in Mauritius and am French-speaking. Next to it is my Motorola GM300 2-meter amateur rig, which is connected to a 5/8 wave ground plane antenna for VHF, very high frequency operation, ZS5DG continues. Other gear includes a Heathkit SWR, that's a standing wave ratio bridge, and a separate receiver. There are three photographs accompanying this, and doesn't look too complicated, but apparently it really gets the job done for Daniel Giraud, Zulu Sierra 5 Delta Golf, from Durban, South Africa. Well, going back to our country out west, we have Bill Pasternak, called WA6ITF. Bill's piece is titled Frequency Coordination. Please don't shoot the messenger. I consider hams who volunteer their time to serve on local or regional coordinating bodies as messengers of peace, for lack of a better term. Some hams find themselves in harm's way by performing the service, many times receiving only brickbats and catcalls in return for their efforts to promote peace and harmony among users of various modes on various bands in a given geographic region. In the late 1960s, the 70s, and 80s, a coordinator only had one thing to be concerned with, to shoehorn in as many repeaters as possible on a given band. Today, it's not quite as easy, because there are so many modes vying for the limited spectrum available on most of the popular bands above 28 megahertz, with 2 meters and 70 centimeters attracting the most attention. When I first came to 2 meters in the 60s, nearly everyone ran low power using full carrier AM modulation, amplitude modulation. The lone exception was California, where experimentation with frequency modulation, FM, had begun in the late 1940s. By the end of the 50s, the California hilltops were alive with the sound of private, remote-based FM, but few outside the region knew it. In the late 50s, the world's first automatic control repeater running simultaneous AM and FM was also on the air, serving the ham radio community of Los Angeles, thanks to the pioneering work of the late Arthur M. Gentry, W6MEP. Its call sign was K6MYK, and its story was told in depth in an article I wrote in the March 2004 issue of QST Magazine. It was titled, Once Upon a Hilltop. Because of these developments, repeater and remote-based operation was growing by leaps and bounds in the southwestern United States. Thankfully, the hams of that era were smart enough to realize that without some form of consistency of band planning, there would be havoc, leading to the formation of the California Amateur Relay Council, of which every other volunteer spectrum management group is, in essence, a direct or indirect descendant. It's all documented in the writings of Kendall Webster Sessions, called K6MVH. Kendall is now a silent key. Coordination councils and individual coordinators are, for the most part, some of the most competent technologists in today's amateur radio. Most are there to serve the needs of hams such as you and me. And if you live in a crowded urban area, they are almost indispensable. Think of the chaos that would ensue if there was no coordination body to determine the feasibility of establishing repeaters to serve your community with minimal or no interference to one another. But it does not end there. FM and digital voice repeaters are not the only uses of our various VHF and UHF spectrum. DXers hang out at the very bottom of 2 meters, mostly running single sideband, CW, which is Morse code, and a plethora of digital modes, including packet and APRS, with the latter gaining a lot of favor worldwide. Let's not forget frequencies dedicated to ham radio and space operations here in North America on and around a 145.800 downlink and a 144.490 uplink. There are still a lot of folks running AM on 10, 6, and 2 meters whose rights also need to be respected by a frequency coordinator or spectrum management organization. So it is no longer just fitting in more repeaters, but rather respecting and catering to the needs, wants, and desires of every user of a given band. It is very important to remember that coordination bodies, all of them, serve at the will of the ham radio community, not the other way around. When a coordinator or spectrum manager stops receiving the community support it requires, its leadership de jure can posture all it wants, but it has zero authority and soon disappears. A classic example is the failure and dissolvement of the Northeast Repeater Association in the early 70s when it lost its support of those it claimed to represent. Soon it was gone. The association was replaced by smaller state regional organizations, of which one, TSARC, eventually failed. Through the will of the community, it was replaced by the highly successful Metro Corps for New York and New Jersey, and the Connecticut Spectrum Management Association to the north. All of this came about by the majority will of the representative ham communities of the region. Over the years, there have been a few hams here and there whose service on a coordination body has been self-centered in the hope of gaining exclusive spectral assignments. But in nearly every case, these people were found out and forced out. They are the minority and did not represent the true volunteerism of the majority. Another thing to consider is that these volunteer coordinators and spectrum managers are constantly in a position of legal liability. Classic examples of this were the highly publicized 1980s case in California and Texas, where coordinators who were sued both as organizations and or as individuals because some want to be repeater operators were either unhappy with their assigned frequencies or the coordinator could not find a suitable frequency pair that would not cause significant interference to others already using a given frequency. It cost many thousands of dollars to defend these tort actions, with some people coming close to losing their life savings and their homes, all because they volunteered to serve their fellow hams. All of this over a hobby. As to the complaints by some newer hams regarding repeater channelization, it exists because repeaters are not frequency agile while users are. Today's channelized operation, which for relay and FM simplex operation is an outgrowth of a process that began in the early 50s in California, was popularized in the late 1960s with the Texas 2-meter band plan, originated by the Texas VHF FM Society. It ultimately attained ARRL blessing, that's the Amateur Radio Relay League blessing, and is what really accounts for 90% of the coordination we see today. Over the years, it has been modified to suit the needs of given geographic regions, but in reality, its publication in the 60s opened the door to as much national standardizing as has been possible in the past half century. In closing, it is very easy to sit back and criticize those who in most cases serve their ham communities for the betterment of the majority. If you happen to be one of those whose life is devoted to being a critic of others, then might I suggest before you continue that you volunteer for a few years with your local coordination body, as I did, and learn firsthand the total selflessness of the people who try to make utilization of our scarce spectrum tolerable and as interference-free as possible for the rest of us. It's easy to sling arrows from the proverbial rocking chair, but unless you have been there and done that, your criticism has no basis in fact. Let's take a look now at the hamfests and special events for January. Winston-Salem, North Carolina, the fourth site. Amateur Radio Club will hold its annual First Fest Swap Meet on Saturday, January 8th. At the Summit School Athletic Center, 2100 Reynolds Road, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. In Bethpage, New York, Ham Radio University 2011 is January 9 at Briarcliff College, 1055 Stewart Avenue, Bethpage, New York. For some of you old-time Morse code operators with the straight keys, the Straight Key Century Club is celebrating 5 years of growth to over 7,200 members on CW. Special event called K3Y Kilo 3 Yankee will be operating in all call areas starting at 0 Zulu January 1 and ending at 2359 Zulu on January 31, 2011. Various frequencies. In northern Minnesota, the Lake Milliock Ice Fishing Shack special event from northern Minnesota, January 14 through 16, 2100 Zulu through 2100 Zulu. Call W0JH, Whiskey Zero Juliet Hotel, Stillwater, Minnesota Amateur Radio Association. They'll be operating on single sideband on 21.358, 14.258, 7.258, and 3.858 megahertz. QSL certificates will only be sent via email. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, the 2011 146.580 Group Albuquerque Winter Tailgate is being held January 29 from sunrise to 2 p.m. It's in the rear parking lot of the TransCore M-Tech Technology Center, 8600 Jefferson Street, Northeast Albuquerque, New Mexico. In California, Hamfest Raffle Winter Field Day. It's at 4193 Matthew Drive, Palm Springs, California, on January 29, between the times of 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., of course, California time. It's sponsored by the Desert Rats, called WD6RAT, and the Palm Springs DX Club. We'll continue now with an interesting article from the Quarter Century Wireless Association, QCWA. Thoughts on the QCWA, HF, and condo living. The author of this article is Dave Hayes, Victor Echo 3 Juliet X-ray, VE3JX. That's a Canadian call sign. Many of our older members have made the choice of downsizing their living accommodations. Having a large lot and home is no longer practical for them. The decision is not taken lightly, since it is well known that condominium or townhouse living may bring with it various covenants, conditions, and restrictions that limit or prohibit the use of outside antennas. Many newer full-size home subdivisions also have CCNRs. Such CCNRs could effectively curtail an active amateur's on-air operations. It is fair to assume that all QCWA members, especially those living in dwellings that have CCNRs attached, are at least interested in the outcome of the current bills before Congress, H.R. 2160 and S. 1755, regardless of their personal assessment of their future success. The American Radio Relay League has been lobbying for congressional support for the sponsorship and passage of these bills, and they have been quite successful in encouraging co-sponsorship of H.R. 2160. S-1755 has already passed the Senate and has been sent to the House of Representatives for its consideration. It sits in committee. H.R. 2160 calls for the Department of Homeland Security to undertake, quoting here, a study of the use of amateur radio for emergency and disaster relief communications by identifying unnecessary or unreasonable impediments to the deployment of amateur radio emergency and disaster relief communications, and by making recommendations for relief of such unreasonable restrictions so as to expand the uses of amateur radio communications in homeland security planning and response, close quotation. Now, in parenthesis, S-1755 is the Senate's companion bill and is almost identical in nature, close parenthesis. It is no wonder that these bills are popular with U.S. radio amateurs. Non-U.S. amateurs are also following their discussion and progress with much interest. However, not everyone is so enthusiastic about them. Why? A leading reason would be that they are steady bills, which are designed to authorize the DHS, that's Department of Homeland Security, to steady, S-T-U-D-Y, the problems, and report its findings. There is nothing that dictates or allows for any actions in accordance with the results of the study. The proposed law just requires that the results be reported back to Congress, so some have called them do-nothing bills. The negative aspect of steady bills is that they can consume a significant amount of revenue, money the U.S. government can't necessarily afford to spend at present. Regardless of the outcome of these bills, whether they live or die, relief from CCNRs will be a long time coming, as there are many legal hurdles yet to jump. One thing we should never expect is that new rules will be enacted that allow us to put up a 65-foot tower and 11-element HF beam beside our townhouse unit, with permission to use our legal limit amplifier as well. This will never happen. However, what is to be hoped for is some sort of compromise where HF, that's high-frequency radio operation, is allowed, with permitted antennas to be as inconspicuous as possible. It is this type of balancing of everyone's desires that will ultimately fly, if any change does occur. We also have to be prepared to see no change to the status quo. What do our members do in the meantime as this whole thing shakes out? There have been several articles and a couple of books authored on the subject of hidden or stealth antennas and operations in condensed living accommodations. In them, instructions on how to build and install virtually invisible or well-concealed antennas have been successfully followed by many enterprising hams, overcoming the adverse conditions with which they live. Also, there are several commercial antenna products on the market designed for limited space use. Now, in parenthesis, one book that I enjoyed on the topic is called Low Profile Amateur Radio - Operating a Ham Station from Almost Anywhere by the author Al Brogdon, spelled B-R-O-G-D-O-N. Al Brogdon's amateur call is W1AB, Whiskey 1 Alpha Bravo, close parenthesis. Operating practices have also been implemented by some members that allow for satisfying operations while not disturbing others' right to enjoy their property. Avoiding RFI, that's radio frequency interference problems, is a bona fide need in condo living with the plethora of electronic gadgetry and controls susceptible to any extraneous RF energy. While the sale of such things should not be allowed, it is a matter of fact that RFI protection in many appliances is almost non-existent. Thus, it would appear to be in our own interest to do what we can to avoid unnecessary problems associated with RFI and TVI by using lower power levels than we otherwise might do if we were back in a large lot home. When we move into our condo unit, it may be a good time to dispose of our legal limit amplifier. Others have gone a step further to eliminate any possibility of neighborhood wrath, especially when CCNRs force them to operate underground with stealth antennas. They have chosen QRP. That's a Q sign in amateur radio, folks. It's a very low power operations with 5 watts or less, and certainly no power amplifier. Now, we are not suggesting that everyone operating from condos have to use 5 watts or less. This is just an observation of how some have continued to enjoy HF operations while under such CCNR limitations. It is an option to consider before giving up your beloved high-frequency band. Most QRP work, though not all, is done with CW, that's continuous wave, or Morse code. Of course, CW, whether QRP or not, has been the mode of choice for many QCWA members over the years. QRP is a good safety choice, particularly when using an indoor antenna, such as in the attic. I have a younger, a relative term, of course, a friend, whose view is, quoting, "Life's too short for QRP." Conversely, I have friends who do not want to operate any other way. The saying that might better apply in this situation is, "Life's too short to give up on HF." If QRP is an answer, then so be it. Helpful is the fact that many modern transceivers do allow for varying the power output down to QRP levels. That being the case, one can experiment with various power levels to see at what maximum power one can enjoy interference-free operations. Time of day can also be taken into consideration, that is, identifying when operations would be least likely to cause problems. Are you a member who was having difficulty with setting up for HF operation in a CCNR environment? There are, no doubt, several fellow members willing to help you. Check with your local chapter for such assistance. I know of one Canadian snowbird who found himself in such a situation with his new dwelling. In his previous Florida abode, he was able to operate by attaching coax from the home to his car-mounted HF antenna. This was impossible at the new dwelling due to a requirement for all cars to be parked in the garage. You can't win, huh? With the garage door closed. Flagpoles are banned as well. A fellow Canadian QCWA member helped him install a stealth Windham antenna in the adjacent pines. Well, so, some situations do not allow for on-air operations at all. Such places as long-term care facilities and nursing or retirement homes may fall into this category. RF energy in some of these places may interfere with medical equipment in use. Are there any possibilities for those who are living there? If there is high-speed computer network access available, a member may be able to use modes that make use of the internet, such as Echolink. There is also QSONET, that's QSONET, an HF simulator on the internet. QSONET involves the use of a software transceiver named CQ100. It covers 5 simulated bands, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters. The system is capable of voice and CW operation. CW is sent via one's computer keyboard. There's also a band scope built in the CQ100 transceiver with user-settable sweep ranges. It appears to be the next best thing to actually being on HF. Let's make a comment about the CQWA QSO party. QSOs are get-togethers on the air, sort of a roundtable. The quarter-century wireless association holds the semi-annual operating event, the QCWA QSO party. Scoring is done according to modes. On-air frequencies include 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, 10, 6, 2, and even 1.25 meters, plus UHF and up. There are categories for CW, slant digital, phone, and mixed use operation. A new mode was added to the contest in mid-2009, the QSO Net, that's CQ100 we just talked about. This, of course, is in response to the needs of many of our members who find themselves without HF access, but who do have a high-speed internet connection. Scoring categories for CQ100 are the same as for HF, though separate. It is to be expected that this mode will grow in popularity as all QCWA members become aware of its existence. It is the expressed wish of QCWA that all its members enjoy themselves during the QSO party, as well as with the hobby in general, whether they have real or simulated access to HF. Last year, the party was held in April and September. Check the March 2011 QCWA column for the dates of the next QCWA QSO party. While non-members are welcome to participate, why not consider joining us and operating as a member? If you are currently licensed and you were first licensed 25 or more years ago, we welcome you to become one of us, the Quarter Century Wireless Association. Folks, as part of John B. Johnson's article regarding rules and regulations, there is always a ham of the month named. This month's ham of the month, the super ham, is Denny Avers, A-V-E-R-S. Denny's call is W3DRY, Whiskey 3, Delta Romeo Yankee. Congratulations, Denny. As I go along in the magazine reading for January 2011 World Radio, I come to the YL column. That's young ladies, of course. That's amateur radio speak for women in amateur radio. The author here is Cheryl Muir, M-U-H-R. Cheryl's call is N0WBV. This one's titled Around the World, YLs are on the air. Now, I must comment first. I'm going to shorten this article considerably because it's rather lengthy. And it gives a lot of the call signs. And I sort of think that some of you folks that listen to this maybe even get a little tired of me having to slow down with the call signs and sometimes giving them to you in phonetics. So I'll just tell you that the YLs have been very active this past year. And as the new year starts, there is so much to do. Winter is one of the best times to get on the air and operate. New things to try each year make great New Year's resolutions. Resolutions can include everything from getting your first license to an upgrade. Go after that award you've always wanted. You can even plan a radio-oriented trip and be the DX or the out-of-the-United-States contact you've only tried to work. Let me know how your resolutions pan out this year so we have even more news for the YL column. Cheryl's always really great with the young ladies in amateur radio, and she was certainly very, very good this month. If you'd like to read about it, have someone read it to you. It begins on page 30 and goes through page 32 of the January 2011 World Radio. Thanks a lot, Cheryl. Let's take a peek now into the contest corner. Straight Key Night. It's 0 Zulu through 2359, January 1, 2011, right around the corner. The bands are modes 80, 40, 20, CW. That's Morse code only. There are no points, no multipliers. The exchange is conversation. Include SKN, so others know you are participating in Straight Key Night. Also on January 1st, original QRP. That's that low-power stuff I was explaining to you folks during this transmission. It's 1500 Zulu 1 January through 1500 Zulu 2 January. It's on 80, 40, 20 meters CW. How about Kids Day? That's on January 2nd. It's great to get in there with kids because you can tell their voices more often than not, and it gives them a great thrill if you have transmitting capabilities to let them know that you're listening and acknowledge their efforts to become great ham radio operators as they age into adulthood. That's 1800 through 2359 Zulu, the 2nd of January. Zulu, of course, is Greenwich Mean Time, as some of you probably remember it, or military time, or Zulu time. Pick it as you want. Just listen for them and participate. It's on all bands, 80 through 10 meters, single sideband. That's voice communications, plus 2 meters on repeaters. It's not on the 30-meter band. How about the ARRL-RTTY Roundup, the RITI contest? That's sort of teletype. That's 1800 Zulu through 2359 Zulu, 8 January through 9 January. North American Q Soap Party, it's on 8 and 9 January, also 1800. That's on bands 160 through 10 meters CW. You know, I must say, you've heard me comment many, many times how popular CW or Morse code is, because it really gets through more often than not when voice transmissions will not get through to other people in other parts of the world. And here's one I can't remember having heard of before. It's hunting lions in the air. That's a good trick, huh? At 0 Zulu, 9 January through 2359 Zulu, 10 January. The bands 160 through 10 meter, all modes. So that could be CW, voice, RTTY, anything that's legal for amateur operation, it's there. Here's another big one. North American QSO Party 1800 through 0600. That's 1800 Zulu 15 January, 0600 Zulu 16 January. Now, on January the 22nd through the 24th, we have the American Radio Relay League January VHF Sweepstakes. That's another big one. It's from 6 meters and up. And CQ Magazine, their very popular 160-meter contest, is 0 Zulu 28 January to 2359 Zulu 30 January. That is 160-meter CW. That's Morse code again, so you can see it's very popular with the ham community. Folks, occasionally I bring up VE exams. That's Volunteer Examiner Exams. As a service to our readers, World Radio Online presents a feature listing of those VE exams, times and locations which are sent to us. Please remember that our deadline for publication is 2 months in advance. For example, if your group is scheduling an exam for December, please have the information to us by October 1st, and so forth. World Radio Online, VE Exams, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. Lists the location, that's city and state, any information examinee should have, for instance, advanced registration or whatever, and the name of the person to contact for further information. Examinee should bring their original license along with a photocopy, two forms of identification, at least one should be a photo, and a required fee, which is a very minimal fee. Now, on page 48 of this edition of World Radio Online is a complete listing, of course, of what was submitted to us, all the way from Arizona through Wisconsin, and it tells everything you need to know. If you're studying for amateur radio licensing, there are places that you can go almost any time of the year in any state, and you usually should look at your local ham radio club because they're doing it more often than not right in your backyard. Just look around. Look on a few rooftops. See if you see a big ham antenna up there. It looks like the old TV antennas. Remember those on your roof? Well, these are the same thing, but they're about 20 times larger if they're on high frequency. Aye, aye. Enough of that. Thanks a lot for listening along with me again. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur call is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for you the online edition of World Radio Magazine for January 2011. This recording is a publication of the Courage Handy Ham System. Happy New Year, 73s.